It is a custom and a cultural practice to read the biographies of great people to learn how to live. And every year, invariably, in bestseller lists, there are biographies of notable people in business, in politics, in sports, in finance. And one assumes that by reading the books of these people, or waiting long enough to see the movie, that we will learn something important about how to live our own lives. As we approach Yizkor, we ought to remember that it is also true that you can learn something about life by observing not only how people live, but how they die. And that the way people die is sometimes a choice, and sometimes teaches us something, sometimes through positive example, sometimes through negative example, that can enable us to live our own lives with greater awareness and greater goodness. And so this morning, I want to take the example of a famous rabbi. You may or may not know his name, but you should, because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Judah the Prince, was the man who was responsible for the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is the foundation book of the Talmud. He died about the year 200 CE, a little bit after he finished compiling the Mishnah, and he was by far the most famous and renowned rabbinic figure of his day. He was, first of all, the leader of the Jewish community. He was, secondly, a very successful businessman. He was very, very wealthy. And he was, third, very learned. And the death of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was a landmark in the Jewish community. At the time, they had lost their political and religious leader. And in the Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud, we have Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's instructions for what should happen after he dies. His own, if you will, both literal and ethical will. And he gives three instructions as he faces death for those who will come after him. He says, first of all, I want to ensure that my widow will continue to be able to live in the house that we lived in together for the rest of her life. Second, he says, I do not want in the funeral procession for my bier, my coffin, to stop at different towns along the way and for people to mourn me as we stop. And third, I want to be buried in simple shrouds. Those are his three instructions. But of course, as with everything, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, if you study the Mishnah, you know this, a lot is packed into a few words. And so I want to take apart those three instructions and understand what the commentators and we can derive from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's instructions about how he wishes to die and be remembered. First of all, it is obviously not taken for granted in that time that the widow would be allowed to live in the house of the man who died, because it's his house in his name. So first we see that his first instruction and his principal concern is for his family. Now you may know, and I certainly know, that there are many people who pass away, especially many wealthy people who pass away, who are heedless of what will happen in their family after they die. their instructions are ambiguous, or they leave it open for the family to fight in all sorts of ways about what it is they really want for the family after they die. And even though they may not think of it this way, it shows a certain lack of love. Because if you really love the people that you leave behind, then you want their lives to be good after you die. You don't want to create division and hatred. And so Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't want his children to fight for the house, or the community leaders to fight for the house, or people to bid for this, what would certainly be a landmark in the community because it was the home of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He wanted to make it clear that it belongs to the woman with whom he lived and shared his life. That's his first instruction. And it says something extremely important to all of us in the way in which we have to think about those who will come after us and what they will have to do to claim their legacy from us. Second, why didn't he want his funeral procession to stop in all the towns along the way in order to reach his ultimate burial ground in Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel? The answer is that every community would first of all have to create some kind of memorial celebration, and he knew that it would cost each community money to do that. And he didn't want his funeral to be the occasion of other people who were, after all, mostly poor, even though he himself was very rich. He didn't want poor people to have to pay because he had passed away. And he was aware of the fact that these were poor people who worked for their living. And they would have to take a day from work in order to come out to pay homage to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, because any Jew who didn't pay homage to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, his own community would frown upon him. And so he left explicit instructions that his death should not be the occasion of strife for the community. And that too is something that he teaches us, which is, it's not only how your family is going to be left and remember you, but your death also is going to be remembered by the community. And how people feel about you after you die is a function of what you say to them while you are still alive. And even sometimes how you ask to be mourned. And then finally, this wealthiest of Jews said he wished to be buried in simple shrouds. And he did that for several reasons. First of all, because if he's buried in simple shrouds, then it is no disgrace for a poor Jew to be buried in simple shrouds. And so no one would ever have to feel that they have to pay a lot of money for the funeral of their beloved, because after all, that's what Jews do, since the great Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did that. That's why to this day, as you know, very traditional Jews, wealthy or not, are buried in a plain pine box. And second, he was making a statement that goes all the way back to the beginning of Bereshit, of Genesis, which says is that every human being, no matter how learned, no matter how renowned, no matter how wealthy, no matter how celebrated, comes from dust and returns to dust. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't need a big mausoleum or a fancy funeral because ultimately he was a person before God. And even though he had greater fame among the Jewish community in his day than any Jew alive today does among the Jewish community in our day, still, shrouds were enough for him. And just in case anyone thought that that wouldn't be enough, because after all, this was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he explicitly commanded it in his own will. This is what I want. It's very simple. It's very short. It takes up a very short passage in the Yerushalmi. But the lessons are deep and profound. It teaches us again that every part of your life, even the leaving of it, is a part of your life in which you show other people what it is you value and what it is you believe. When we say the Yizkor prayer, we not only are remembering those whom we love, but we're remembering what the struggles, the lessons, the failures, the successes, the instructions they left us can teach us about life and the way that we should live. Sometimes those who went before us did it well, and sometimes they did it badly. Sometimes they taught beautiful lessons, and sometimes painful ones. But Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi reminds us that we have to remember not only what was taught to us, but what we will teach. What instructions, explicit and implicit, are we giving to those who will come after us? After all, every human being teaches with their lives what they want when they leave it. All of us tell each other the way we wish to be remembered by the way we act. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi reminds us that ultimately the legacy we leave for our families, for our community, and the lesson we teach about what we believe we are, that we are children of God, special, unique, but so is everyone else, no better than. That's the lesson of every Jewish life. The greatest legacy, of course, that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi left us is not in his dying, but in the Mishnah, which has nourished our people for thousands of years. But the person who left the Mishnah did not have to be celebrated in any special way, because he knew that his legacy was in his words and in his teaching. So for those whom we've lost, the way that we commemorate them best is by remembering their words, remembering their teaching, remembering their touch, and still cherishing their love. It doesn't require monuments, and it doesn't require fancy celebrations. Just the private chamber of each individual heart, where we will never forget them because of who they were and how they touched our lives, and where, God willing, one day we will show, not only by our living, but by how we choose to leave this world, by our dying, that we have learned the lessons of our ancestors and left a beautiful legacy for our descendants. On page 188,